gone back to the loved ones, the ones that I left waiting so far behind. I wanna go home. I wanna go home. Oh, how I wanna go home.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends. And I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again. Going places that I've never been. Seeing things that I may never see again. And I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again.
Hello, walls. Hot things go for you today. Don't you miss her? Since she up and walked away, and I'll bet you dread to spend another lonely night with me. But lonely walls, I'll keep you company. Hello, window. Well, I see that you're still here. Aren't you lonely? Since our darling disappeared. Well, look here, is that a teardrop in the corner of your pain? Now don't you try to tell me that it's rain. She went away and left us all alone the way she planned. Guess we'll have to learn to get along without her. If we can. Hello, ceiling. I'm gonna stare at you a while. You know I can't sleep. So won't you bear with me a while? We must all stick together, or else I'll lose my mind. I've got a feeling she'll be gone a long, long time.
Depose from The Faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
I want to start today with some rare good news when it comes to just the process of voting in the United States. You know, we're waiting to see whether Democrats will be able to push forward the voting rights bill that Joe Biden has been talking about now intensely for the last week or so. But absent that, there are so many different ways in which Republicans are not even fighting the so-called battle of ideas, which they claim to prioritize, and instead fighting to win elections by subterfuge and deception and systems control rather than winning people's hearts and minds. So gerrymandering is one of these ways that Republicans have sought to and have benefited from manipulating the system. Reducing ballot boxes in minority neighborhoods, limiting voting hours, trying to stop mail-in ballots, mandating specific IDs, including IDs that require that while themselves may be free, require documents which, if you don't have them, are not free to obtain. Putting in place partisan actors to oversee the count or whatever the case may be. It's relentless. It's exhausting. And the first element of that that I mentioned is gerrymandering. And we have, you know, you've got to look at this big battle or this big war and the different battles within it. Within the battle around gerrymandering, we have a little bit of good news in one of those sub battles. And that news is that the Ohio Supreme Court has decided to throw into the trash the Republican gerrymandered maps and has given 10 days to fix it. The AP reporting, the Ohio Supreme Court declared Republican drawn legislative maps invalid Wednesday yesterday, agreeing with voting rights advocates that the lines were unconstitutionally gerrymandered. In a 4-3 ruling, the court sent the maps back to the Ohio Redistricting Commission to take another crack at complying with provisions of a 2015 state constitutional amendment, which requires there be an attempt at avoiding partisan favoritism. These maps in Ohio are so gerrymandered that there isn't even evidence that they tried to avoid partisan favoritism. Justices gave the panel 10 days and retained jurisdiction to review the handiwork. The dispute comes amid the process of redrawing legislative and congressional district maps that states must undertake once a decade to reflect changes from the U.S. Census. There's a bunch of interesting elements here, one of which is Republican Governor Mike DeWine, a member of the commission and whose son was among Wednesday's dissenting justices, pledged in a statement to work with my fellow redistricting commission members on revised maps. Think about that. Republican Mike DeWine is a member of the Redistricting Commission, and his son is one of the justices on the Supreme Court who said the maps are fine that my dad was involved in drawing and writing. There are so many ways in which this is just absolutely insane, and you've got to fight these battles one by one. And this is the difficulty. When they have so many ways, you know, they talk about winning the battle of ideas. And the problem is they've lost the battle of ideas. When you look at the country and you say, do most people believe that the government has a basic duty to provide some health care to everybody, regardless of ability to pay? Very popular statement, not reflected in our elected officials, not reflected in the actions of our elected officials. When you say, well, what's the position on abortion nationally? Well, legal in most cases is the opinion of more people than ever before in the United States. Is that reflected in our elected officials? No. They're not winning people over in terms of hearts and minds and policy. They're winning with gerrymandering, making voting difficult for the people that they think would be to their advantage to make voting difficult for, all of the other things that I mentioned. And then when you even take the war and then you look at one battle gerrymandering, and you look at that battle in one state, Ohio, you find, oh, one of the guys who was involved in drawing these lines, which are crazy partisan, was Mike DeWine. And one of the justices on the Ohio Supreme Court deciding as to whether those lines are okay or not is the son of Mike DeWine. It's truly stunning that this is what's going on in this country, but it is. And so we've got to fight these battles one by one. The battle, it's not even that it's been won yet in Ohio. There's the opportunity to win it by getting more fair maps drawn. They have 10 days to do it, now 9 since the decision was yesterday. We'll follow it and we'll let you know what happens. I'm going to play a video clip for you today, which is really a great example of reporters doing what they're supposed to do, which is when you ask a question and it's not answered, you ask it again. And if you're not able to ask it again, your colleague asks it again. This, you've got to see this. One of the things that was done in Arizona after the 2020 election was that an alternative slate of electors signed a document saying that they were the electors from Arizona. Now, you might remember Joe Biden won Arizona. And so Arizona sent Democratic electors to Washington, D.C. to say Arizona casts our electoral votes in favor of Joe Biden. Nothing controversial there. We now have uncovered fake state documents falsely declaring that Donald Trump won the 2020 election. On Tuesday, Rachel Maddow shared 5 fake certificates of ascertainment sent to the National Archives in an ill-conceived plot to make it seem as if Trump had won. One of the Republican lawmakers who signed that fake document is State Representative Jake Hoffman. Jake Hoffman was confronted by a number of reporters and asked, "Why did you sign a fake declaration? It's bogus. Joe Biden won. Why would you sign that?" Jake Hoffman seems to realize he may be in legal hot water here. He tries to avoid answering the questions. He's asked them again. And then look at how he simply implodes and says he doesn't know how he even ended up in a position to sign it. This is unbelievable. Take a look at this.
When Bram wants to ask a real question, happy to have a conversation with him.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Oh, sure.
Okay, so the question was, how did you end up being in the position of being an elector, given you're a Republican, Joe Biden won? Okay, so here we go. Let's see what he says.
I'm asking you that question. Wonder, what authority did you find yourself as an elector?
So in unprecedented times, unprecedented action is occurred. There is no case law. There's no precedent that exists as to whether or not an election that is currently being litigated in the courts has due standing.
Now, understand that everything he just said is BS. The Arizona election results were by definition not being litigated in the courts when they tried to send an alternate slate of Republican electors in January. There had been legal challenges between the election and the certification of the election, which happened in November and December, respectively. At the time that it was certified, it's no longer being litigated in court. Just because you submit something and keep submitting stuff to a court saying you believe it should be disputed doesn't mean it's being litigated. The everything he's saying is untrue. Now, when he says that there's no precedent, there's no reason to believe that you would be able to send an alternate slate of electors just for the hell of it because you keep filing disputes and disputes in court. The election had been, yes, disputed between November and December, certified. And at that point, it's no longer in dispute, legally speaking. So what he's saying is completely bogus. But watch how much crazier it gets.
Which is why we felt it appropriate to provide Congress and the vice president with dueling opinions.
Did you have direction from anybody in doing this? Was it you, 11, yourself doing this, or did someone give you advice on?
So this is a great question. Did the 11 of you who said we are the electors rather than the actual electors, did you guys do this yourself? Or did someone tell you to do it?
The manner in which you can do it.
So I'm simply, I was one of the electors, right? I'm not in charge of the electors, so you would need
how
to.
How did you hear about
you,
it?
You would need to ask the party chair.
How did you hear about it? How did you hear about the plan? Were you just told to be someone?
You would need to ask the party chair.
This is so unbelievable. He's just being asked, okay, you're one of 11. Who told you, hey, we're going to do this? We're going to do this document. How did the plan come together?
But you're the person who received the call. You showed up, right? How did you know to show up that day?
So as I said, you can go ahead and ask the party chair the logistics of it.
Ask her how you got a phone call to
hear
someone?
You're welcome to talk to them about
the
logistics.
Do you not know how you arrived at a place?
Thank you. I appreciate your
Do
question.
Do you really not know how you got a call?
Have a great one.
The other question, I was hoping to
This is just, this is really, really well done. Understand what he's saying. It's sort of like if I say, hey, when I used to be on a dodgeball team, right? Intramural dodgeball team or whatever. You're here playing, right? And you have teammates. Yes. Okay. How did you know to come here today? You got to ask somebody else. No, but I mean, like, is there a schedule? How did you, because you want to play dodgeball and you think playing dodgeball is good, but how did you know to be here at 6 today? Like, is that part of a league? Or, oh, no. It doesn't make any sense. And this guy realizes that he's in legal hot water. Reporters should be doing this in the press briefing room. When one answer gets blown off, the next person's just got to ask the same question. Now, is it too much to expect prosecution here? Because what they've did is very serious. What they did here is extraordinarily serious. Understand that they sent a document representing that they are the electors when they are not the electors. Joe Biden won Arizona. There are a number of different possible crimes here, and I'm not even going to list them because it's all still very early and lawyers are sort of in the speculative phase. But can we expect prosecution here? I don't know the answer to that. I fear that the answer is no, but really good job done by those reporters. Make sure you're following me on Twitter and let me know what you make of it. Our program depends on the support of our viewers and listeners. You can make a contribution and get tons of extras while doing it by getting a membership at joinpacman.com. We do an extra show every day for our members called The Bonus Show. You can sign up at joinpacman.com. Yes, we are still banned from Facebook monetization. 5 or 6 different people are lobbying on our behalf, but we are, as of now, 4 days into a 90-day monetization ban. So you can sign up at joinpacman.com with the coupon code FFacebook. Quite a coupon code. Okay, one of the things that we have been kind of discussing, me with many in the audience, is how we should react to the deaths of the unvaccinated, or more specifically, the anti-vaccine individuals who prominently say we're against the COVID vaccine, and then they die of COVID. I get emails all the time from people saying, David, you really shouldn't gloat about anti-vaxxers dying. And I agree. I don't gloat about anti-vaxxers dying. I've said time and again, I feel terribly about people who have been misled into thinking the vaccine is a bad thing, and then they get COVID, and then they die, and their family members grieve, and it's sad. I don't gloat about it. But this is super interesting. There's a column in the Los Angeles Times by Michael Hiltzik, which says we should be mocking anti-vaxxer deaths, and it is a fascinating read. We will link to it, and I encourage you to look at it. Michael writes, among all the ways that COVID affects our lives, the pandemic confronts us with a profound moral dilemma. How should we react to the deaths of the unvaccinated? On the one hand, a hallmark of civilized thought is the sense that every life is precious. On the other, those who have deliberately flouted, that's not flaunted, remember, that's a word, flouted sober medical advice by refusing a vaccine known to reduce the risk of serious disease from the virus, including the risk to others, and end up in the hospital or the grave, can be viewed as receiving their just deserts. That's even more true of those who not only refused the vaccine for themselves, but publicly advocated that others do so. It has become common online and in social media for vaccine refusers and anti-vaccine advocates to become the target of ridicule after they come down with COVID, and especially if they die from it. Witness the subreddit Herman Cain Award. The site is named for the former Republican candidate for president who became one of the first political notables to succumb to the disease after publicly defying social distancing measures. Like another site, Sorry Anti-Vaxxer, the subreddit hosts snippets and photographs of anti-vaccine advocates often taken at their deathbeds. The issue of how to think about the deaths of unvaccinated has been thrown into high relief locally by the case of Kelly Earnby. Remember, we covered that. That's the Orange County Republican who was against the mandates and died of COVID unvaccinated. Earnby's death promptly came to symbolize the rift in the social fabric caused by the ravages of COVID. And then it goes on to say that some of what is happening with her is bigotry and hate. Michael Hiltzik has a different take. He says, to begin with, let's stipulate not all unvaccinated people are alike. Some are unvaccinated for legit medical reasons, children for whom the COVID vaccines haven't been ruled safe, or someone with a real medical reason. Some may have faced obstacles in getting to a vaccination site. Others may have been refused the vaccine because they've been deceived by Fox News or whatever else. The deaths are truly lamentable. Finally, there are those who have voiced public opposition to the vaccines, not all of whom are unvaccinated themselves. Earnby was in that category. She asserted opposition not to vaccines, but to mandates. And Hiltzik goes on to say, it should be clear that opposing vaccine mandates as a substitute for opposing vaccination itself is a fundamentally incoherent position. It's little more than the garden variety small government Republican ideology. Hiltzik points out the significantly lower vaccination rate of Republicans and says mandates do work. Requirements that people provide evidence of vaccination have been associated with heightened vaccine rates. As for whether vaccination mandates are a slippery slope to more government control, which many of these people maintain, government mandates for vaccines have been with us for decades, and for other kinds, wearing seatbelts, having airbags in cars, banning smoking in public places, and that these mandates exist because the diseases threaten not only the infected people, but also the community. And Hiltzik goes on to say, ultimately, that it is so pernicious that we have these people around advocating against vaccines or against vaccine mandates, that in fact, we should be ridiculing them, that in fact, we should be mocking them, and that in the long run, even though it feels like a ghoulish thing to do, the same way that vaccine mandates work, mocking those who are anti-vax, outspokenly anti-vax or anti-mandate and then die, actually is effective at getting people vaccinated, that it might feel wrong, as I have said and many of you have said, but that it is actually a necessary thing to do because of the public health consequences. Check out Michael Hiltzik's opinion piece, and I would love to hear from you about this. Let me know what you think. Speaking of vaccines, there is something very interesting going on, which is that Donald Trump, the former president, although he was softly dismissive of vaccination when it comes to any kind of requirement and continued to play up freedom, we all need our freedom, we all need our freedom, has actually become a very forceful advocate for the safety and efficacy of COVID vaccines. And we have an incredible clip from yesterday. Donald Trump did another interview with OAN. So you've got Fox News, which is crazy right wing. You've got Newsmax, which is even crazier. And then you've got OAN, which is even crazier than Newsmax. And Donald Trump was sort of softly confronted by the reporter about there's all these people concerned. There's all these concerns about the vaccine. And Donald Trump very forcefully said, it's ridiculous. And by the way, listen to when Trump says there are officials who are not even telling the truth that they've been vaccinated. I believe he is signaling Ron DeSantis here, and I'm going to get back to that. Check out this clip.
Just because a lot of viewers wrote in. I put a kind of all call out to our viewers on the program. Okay. If you had questions for the president, what would it be? Good. Top two, election integrity. We'll get to in a second. But the other one was the vaccine.
Right.
You recently stated in an interview with Candace Owens and when you were on the road with Bill O'Reilly doing the book tour and the speaking engagement that you've had the vaccine, two shots, and you've had the booster.
Right.
And you recommend it for folks. We have seen with the VAERS report, there's tens of thousands of side effects.
Now, remember, the VAERS reports are unverified. This is important. Anyone can submit something to VAERS. Anybody. We can't glean anything from VAERS.
Side effects in this vaccine, any vaccine history, and more deaths. Dr. Robert Malone, 9 patents for the mRNA technology being used in the vaccines.
Remember, Robert Malone's claims have already been debunked.
He came on my program a couple weeks ago and said, unless you're over 65 and have a comorbidity, I recommend it. Other than that, I don't recommend taking it. He even is upset he took it himself. He's having heart issues. Looking back, we know that Warp Speed was great. You did amazing with getting rid of it.
And the talking out of both sides of the mouth. The rapidity with which you got these vaccines done is amazing. We just don't want them because they're not good vaccines. Getting them is great. Using them, not, it's completely, I mean, it is a pretzel. It is a pretzel.
Tape to get something out there. But after now so many months of the vaccine being administered and these side effects and Americans' questions of it, do you reconsider your push for it, or what's your view now on the vaccine in general?
Well, I've taken it. I've had the booster. Yep. Many politicians, I watched a couple of politicians be interviewed, and one of the questions was, did you get the booster? Because they had the vaccine. And they're answering it like, in other words, the answer is yes, but they don't want to say it.
He's very clearly referring to Ron DeSantis there. And this is already a signal about if DeSantis wants to be the nominee in 24 and Trump wants to be the nominee in 24, it's going to get very ugly very quickly, which I love.
Because they're gutless. You got to say it. Whether you had it or not, say it. But the fact is that I think the vaccine has saved tens of millions of people throughout the world. I have had absolutely no side effects. I've had it like other people have had it, nothing special.
So Donald Trump here is, he, other than the fact that he takes credit for the vaccines, for which he deserves no credit, the U.S. pre-purchased doses, that's all they did. Trump deserves no credit for the vaccine. These vaccines were going to be developed in this amount of time, no matter who was president. You could have had, Barney Rubble as president. These vaccines would have been developed. Trump is absolutely right about what he's saying. And it is crazy that these networks now are having to sort of put themselves in these pretzels. Hilariously, this guy on OAN still equates Trump to Jesus. To just look at the level of sycophancy.
Now, look. He's not perfect. No one is. He sins. I sin. We all sin. But as you know, who did our Savior, Jesus Christ, hang out with back in the day? Who did he use to spread his message or do his will?
Right.
Guess what? They weren't famous. They weren't politicians. They weren't rulers or tyrants. They were lepers. They were prostitutes. They were the blind and the deformed. The people that society had cast away.
Yeah.
They were, in a word, deplorables.
Right. So there we go. They still love Trump and see him as a godlike figure. When Trump is the voice of reason, you know you're on an insane network. And without any hesitation, Trump's lying about his role in the vaccines. But what Trump is saying about the vaccines themselves is absolutely right. OK, real quick, I don't want to spend a ton of time on this, but I want to just show you that the Tucker Carlson Fox News program has become a complete and totally open platform for conspiracy theories at this point in time. That's all it is. Yesterday, I showed you how Tucker loves this Ray Epps, the FBI did the Trump riots conspiracy theory, and he used Ted Cruz to push it. He then had on Glenn Beck, who has COVID right now, and allowed Glenn Beck to push the Washington State COVID internment camp conspiracy theory. If you haven't heard about it, I'll tell you about it in a moment.
The Great Reset is not a conspiracy theory. It is something that the Davos people have put together along with the World Economic Forum. And it is running rampant through every Western capital and every Western country. It is, I just read this. Tomorrow morning at 9:30, the Washington State COVID detainment emergency.
Uh-oh.
They are going to have a State Board of Health discussing from 9:30 to 3:30 tomorrow, allowing local health officers to use law enforcement to force an emergency order in involuntarily detaining a person or group of persons' families to be isolated in a quarantine facility. Following the refusal to voluntarily comply with requests, medical examinations, testing, treatment.
By the way, if you're not watching, Tucker's doing the confused face the entire time here.
And vaccination. This is an internment camp. Washington State has done it before. They haven't obviously learned their lesson from World War II. This, again, is all about total and complete control.
Now, everything Glenn Beck is saying is a lie. This has been widely debunked. Let me tell you what's going on. No, writes KREM, Washington won't forcibly quarantine those who have COVID or are unvaccinated. The State Board of Health has received thousands of emails about an agenda item that will be discussed this week. Claims are going around that Washington politicians are trying to create laws that would allow them to force unvaccinated people into quarantine. The State Board of Health received thousands of emails. We set out to verify claims. The question, does this proposal allow health officials to use law enforcement to force an emergency order to involuntarily detain a person or group in a facility if they refuse to comply with requests for medical treatment, testing, treatment, counseling, or vaccination? The answer, no. The state isn't trying to quarantine forcibly those who have COVID or are unvaccinated. Just to be really clear, our board meeting on Wednesday is there are no conversations about isolation and quarantine camps. There are no rules existing or in the making to create isolation and quarantine camps. There are no rules, and there is no process in place to create a rule to involuntarily quarantine or isolate COVID-19 positive people. Regardless of vaccination, there are no laws and no plans to do it. Period. It's just bogus. There's just nothing there. And Tucker Carlson's Fox News program, which is, I think at this point, the most widely listened to right wing program. I mean, maybe Joe Rogan is considered a right wing program now and has a bigger audience, but it is one of the biggest right wing programs. Every day there's a new conspiracy theory. If you watch Tucker and you accept the stuff on there, the feds did 9/11. I'm sorry. The feds did the Trump riots, not 9/11. Maybe they say the feds did 9/11, too. I don't know. The feds did the Trump riots is what I mean. And they're going to there's going to be an internment camp for people with COVID in Washington. Every day, it's a new conspiracy theory. Extraordinarily dangerous stuff. And if you're just listening today, we'll have these clips up on our Instagram, which you can find at David Pakman Show. Today, we're going to be speaking with Sheila Alechi, who is a reporter with ICIJ and also coordinates the organization's partners in Asia and Western Europe. Thanks so much for talking to us today.
Thank you.
So my audience has certainly heard of the Pandora Papers. We've reported, I don't know about extensively, but we've reported about the Pandora Papers. For people who maybe aren't familiar with what these documents are, how do you generally summarize what the documents are?
Well, I would say that Pandora Papers is an investigation based on a leak of about 12 million documents, confidential financial records coming from 14 different financial service providers from around the world, from the most secretive jurisdictions, including Seychelles, Cyprus, BVI, and so forth. And what these documents tell us is how the offshore financial system works, but not just that, also how the global economy in a way works, because the system that thrives on secrecy and anonymity is basically a big part of the global economy right now. And
some of the biggest headlines related to prominent individuals, politicians, elected officials, functionaries of other kinds, well-known people. I don't know if secretly is the right word, but certainly behind the scenes, using a lot of these other mechanisms and instruments for their own personal finances. Is that a fair assessment?
I think so. What we found was that more than 300 politicians, including more than 30 current and former country leaders, used shell companies and offshore trusts to hide wealth from their own citizens as well. So public elected officials, such as the president of Kenya, the king of Jordan, the then prime minister of Czech Republic, and other prominent politicians used these kind of structures to hide wealth or buy real estate around the world. And obviously, we have to be careful here. We don't want to say that all of this is illegal. Much of this actually is legal and legitimate. But the problem here is actually that it allows people to avoid scrutiny. And so it can be used by, you know, husbands who don't want their divorcees to know about their assets, as well as criminals who don't want authorities to know about their assets.
How does the ICIJ obtain these documents to the extent that you can talk to us about the process?
Yes, we don't comment on our sources. We obtain these documents, and what we did initially was fact-checking most of them and trying to figure out whether they were actually, whether they were accurate and where they were, you know, fake documents. And the way we do, this is a process that we have learned to do over time, because this is not the first offshore financial project that we do. We obviously check the leaked documents against public records. We always involve journalists from many different countries who have the expertise and the sources who allow us also to verify the information, whether it's true or not. And as you know, we don't publish the whole data set, because there are confidential information and also, you know, information that is may not be true. So we try to, you know, go publish only stories that we are able to verify and also ask comment for.
Yeah, I wanted, that was going to be my next question about asking for comment. In many types of stories, when someone is written about, you ask that person for a comment, there's a deadline, they have the opportunity to say something or to say no comment or to not even respond at all. Here, the story is really the documents. And if the documents are accurate, the concept of a comment is a little bit different, right? Because it's basically, what exactly are we asking for when we ask for comment about a document?
Well, we want to know the context, because sometimes you don't have the story in one document. You may know that one person set up a company and that's it. You may know what it is for. Sometimes you don't even know what the purpose of this company is. So obviously we want to know. And we also want to know the purpose, for example, if it was for tax reasons or not. And then obviously, you know, we also want to just give the opportunity to anybody to have their say. And SEIJ alone, we are about 15 reporters and editors on staff, and we sent more than 400 comment requests just for this investigation, excluding all the requests that our partners have sent. So every name that is on our story, we will be, you know, fact checked, and they will have the opportunity to comment.
Now, out of the 400, how many chose to comment?
I don't know the exact percentage, but I must say that what I've noticed is that over time, people, especially politicians, have developed a very good strategy, and most of them did not respond, or did not respond adequately, or they chose not to respond to our questions and wait for after publication to go on their social media and Facebook and, you know, give their own opinion there directly to their followers.
You mentioned that a lot of what is revealed is not against the law, but it can be used in ways to circumvent reporting requirements, or there's a lot of different ways in which these mechanisms can be used. How much of the investigation is talking to lawyers about, is there anything illegal here, and highlighting the illegal?
A lot of, because we are journalists, we are not experts. Obviously, we've been doing this for many years, so there are some basic, you know, concepts and knowledge that we have. But at the same time, you also want to be sure that, you know, you are up to date with the most recent legislation or regulation, etc. And also here we talk about hundreds of countries. So each country has its specific regulation. And after Panama Papers, which is an investigation we did in 2016, some laws changed. So you also want to be sure that what you're reporting now is obviously up to date. So, yes. So we love experts, and they always help us understand the context. Sometimes when we have teams, reporting teams from many different countries, we also have experts from many different countries who kind of tell us what's going on.
So for this, I want to give a little context for my next question. In the United States, certainly, and I think this happens in other countries too, whenever there's a leak of information, if you like the content of the leak, you focus on the content and you ignore how the documents were obtained. If you don't like the content of the leak, you ignore the content and you say, how dare they get these private documents? You focus only on how it was obtained. When we're talking about banking records, I mean, there certainly are privacy laws and different countries have different rules, the same as with medical records, with banking information. How does the ICIJ think about that at the end of the day, these documents are presumably documents that are believed to be private documents? And how what is the sort of ethical approach to that?
So first of all, whenever we publish a name or a story, we always ask whether it's in the public interest. So I'm not going to publish my neighbor's, banking records. Nobody okay. cares about that. But I do care about a politician. I do care also about a powerful business person who may have a political ties or any impact on a community. Obviously, I do care about criminals. So that's some ethical discussion that we, we have always had before publishing anything. And then again, you go and ask for comments. So you don't do it behind the back. You always try to confront the people that you're writing about, so that it's not a surprise. And when I say we go to for comment, we have, we ask about at least 5 weeks before publication so that we can always ask at least three times. calling, I have sent, for example, last time I sent a registered mail to Myanmar, because there was only a physical address that I could use. And you try whatever you can.
Is this the type of investigation where for your team there are physical security concerns for the reporters that are doing the investigating?
So lucky, ICIJ's team, most of it is based in the US or in Europe. But of course, we work with journalists from around the world and, from Russia, Hong Kong, for example, Arab countries. And we have a lot of, and also in Latin America, many Latin American countries have press freedom issues. So more than the ICIJ staff, obviously, we're always concerned for our partners and we work with them every day. We're always in touch. So if there is an issue for them, we try to help them. For example, one thing that we do is if a partner cannot publish a story in their own country, there may be a partner in a neighboring country that can publish that story for them so that the person or the reporters in trouble can report on something that has already been reported without exposing themselves. So that's why collaboration is great, because it also help protect each other, and especially people in, more vulnerable situations.
Whenever there are these big leaks and revelations, there's the question of, okay, so what is the ideal consequence or outcome? With, you look at the Edward Snowden NSA leaks, and there are a lot of people who said, well, the outcome should be, now that people have been made aware of these techniques, those should be changed, they should be made illegal, or, there's kind of like a clear path. What's the goal here? Is it sort of international tax and finance policy reform, or what would be the outcome that would be an ideal outcome?
Well, surely transparency is something that we will hope to have more around the world. And after Panama Papers, for example, some countries introduced laws to, record the beneficial ownership and so forth. And every time, obviously, that we do a project like this, new loopholes emerge. For example, this time, something interesting had to do with the U.S. And what we learned was that while smaller jurisdictions, for example, like Bahamas, were trying to improve their own system, huge economies like the U.S. were actually becoming the go-to place for people to hide money. And so this time, we really hope that it's the U.S. that actually step up and improve their own regulations.
When it comes to people like Elton John, Jackie Chan, you know, Shakira, named in the papers. Talk to me about the public interest there. And to be clear, I'm not saying there is no public interest. It seems different than an elected official that might influence policy, however. So I'm curious about the public interest when it comes to entertainers.
You know, I understand that there is a difference between a politician, an elected official, and a pop star. But at the same time, these people have a lot of influence, even if it's just on people, a lot of impact on everybody. And so they kind of like they chose a public life in a way. And so obviously their finances, if we find something that is worth reporting, then that can be, put on scrutiny. At the same time, we always go and ask for comment. And so, for example, there were a few of these celebrities that came back saying that they had done nothing wrong, and which we also reported, like models, etc. This is a system that we want people to understand why it is significant. At the same time, while it is legitimate in some cases, you know, you still have tax revenues that are lost. So we want the public to be informed. And whether it's a politician or a celebrity that contributes to the system, I think it's still worth talking about it.
Well, it's an incredible investigation, and I encourage people in my audience to go to the ICIJ website, and there's so much documentation there. We've been speaking with Sheila Alechi, who is a reporter with the ICIJ. I really appreciate your time today. Thanks so much for talking to us.
Thank you.
I want to look at a clip from, I believe it's yesterday's Joe Rogan program. Joe Rogan interviewed a friend of our show, Josh Zepps, very good guy. I've been on his show. Doesn't mean Josh and I agree on everything, but I've always known him to be a good guy. Josh appeared with Joe Rogan, and the topic came up of myocarditis risk for young men from the COVID vaccines. Important topic. Joe Rogan was presented with the evidence that the risk of myocarditis from having COVID is significantly higher than the risk of myocarditis from the vaccine. In both cases, most everybody recovers no problem, but the risk of myocarditis is higher if you get COVID than if you get the vaccine. In real time, you will see really disappointing, goalpost moving and techniques from Joe Rogan that are really typical, sadly, of the people that email me and are clearly set in their ways and don't want to have their minds changed. So let's take a look at the conversation. This is interesting. It's also really sad.
Avoiding myocarditis more common after COVID-19 infection than vaccination. But is this what?
So first, now here's a study. The study already says myocarditis is more common from COVID than from the vaccine. So that already goes against what Joe Rogan has been told, and I'll show you part of where he got it.
Children? We're talking about young people. Men.
So Rogan now says, well, I'm talking about it within young people only.
Boys aged under 30 after this is what it says here.
So as you can see, the study, Jamie points out, includes up to age 30. And that includes younger, and that includes up to all the way up to 30.
With children is the issue.
Well, no. And Rogan says, I'm only concerned about children here.
We're talking about 15-year-olds.
Well, we're talking about young children.
Male child. Yes, 12 to 17.
12 to 17, more likely to develop myocarditis within 3 months of catching COVID at a rate of 450 cases per million infection. This compares to 67 cases of myocarditis per million.
So Josh points out correctly, look at the 12 to 17 age group. Is that young enough, Joe? Even among 12 to 17, your risk of getting myocarditis from COVID is about 8 times higher than from the vaccine.
Time following their second dose of Pfizer.
Yeah, so you're about 8 times likelier to get myocarditis from getting COVID than from getting the vaccine.
That's interesting.
Now,
that is not what I've read before, but also it's like, when we're reading these things, it's like, what are we getting this from?
This is a peer-reviewed study. And there's numerous peer-reviewed studies that have been done on this. So notice the goalpost shifting. It's, okay, now there is a claim that the risk is actually higher of myocarditis from COVID than from vaccines. But can we really trust what we're reading? Well, actually, we can.
From the VAERS report, but even from the VAERS reports, when they report this stuff, it's like the amount of people that report, the like it's the underreporting.
So now there's a new thing, which is Rogan says, even if you consider VAERS, which is not even verified, Rogan says it stuff is being underreported. So this study is based on underreporting to VAERS when we know the real issue with VAERS is actually overreporting, completely unconfirmed reporting. Notice the goalpost shifting that takes place.
Depending upon who you ask and like what it is, it's either 1% under.
Okay. So this is unfortunately, this is what happens a lot of times when you have these types of conversations with people. Now, I had this conversation not long ago. I have a family member who works in pediatrics. And I said before I got my third dose, you know, I'm kind of freaked out because now when you sign up for your third, like I'm the most pro-vaccine person. When I signed up for my third dose, it had me understand. It said, do you understand that there is a risk of myocarditis? And it just freaked me out. And the person I was talking to said, yeah, but David, remember, the risk to people your age from COVID of myocarditis is higher than from the vaccine. And here's studies that we've been looking at. And I looked at it and I said, oh, you're absolutely right. Right. That makes sense. And a lot of this goes back to that Peter McCullough appearance with Joe Rogan, where McCullough was talking about vaccine induced myocarditis and did not mention, by the way, the risk of COVID induced myocarditis is dramatically higher than from the vaccine. So I wish that Joe Rogan had received this information differently. Really nice job by Josh Zepps. And as I've said before, I welcome any opportunity to go back on and talk to Rogan about exactly this issue. When comedian and actor Bob Saget died and there was not immediately a cause of death announced, I told you guys there are people who are going to say he died from the vaccine, from the COVID vaccine. There's no evidence of that. There's no reason to think that that's what happened, but people are going to say that. And of course, I was right, and I'm not patting myself on the back. It was obvious that people were going to say that because anytime there's an unexplained death now, football player dies, must have been the COVID vaccine. Bob Saget dies, must have been the COVID vaccine. A prominent right winger, Candace Owens, is now pushing exactly that conspiracy. Now, there is no evidence for it, but she doesn't care. Let's take a look at what she had to say.
So, am I a conspiracy theorist or am I Nostradamus? The answer is neither. I'm just not on Big Pharma's payroll.
And I now, remember, a lot of the people claiming that their position on vaccines is because they are not on Big Pharma's payroll are the very same people promoting the Regeneron monoclonal antibody treatment, which is dramatically more profitable than the vaccines. Just remember that.
To peddle in their lies. And so to that end, today, I'm going to point out another truth, and it will likely be deemed a conspiracy theory until it's not. There are too many healthy individuals like Bob Saget, who we know have received their vaccinations, who are dropping dead suddenly and unexpectedly with no further explanation.
Now, you have to remember a number of different things. No further explanation, no immediate known cause of death. Could it have been stroke, heart attack, etc.? At some point, if the information is released by the family, we will know. But understand that there's a fundamental mathematical problem here. The closer you get to full vaccination in a country, the more likely it is that everybody who dies will have been vaccinated. In a 100% vaccinated country, everybody who dies of a heart attack will have been vaccinated. Whoa, did the vaccines cause heart attacks? Because everybody who's dying from a heart attack was vaccinated. Everybody who dies from stroke will have been vaccinated. Wow. You're telling me every stroke death was in vaccinated people? In the United States now, we are in the low 60s vaccination. That means anybody who dies from anything, there is a 2/3 chance that they were vaccinated. Causation, correlation, Candace Owens doesn't care. And this is very irresponsible.
Healthy athletes, young students in their physical prime, the majority of them males, dropping suddenly and unexpectedly in the middle of games from heart issues. What we know for a fact is that these people are being mandated to take the vaccine. And we know for a fact that these vaccines come with a warning that they bring about myocarditis.
Now, remember, the risk of myocarditis from COVID is higher, but they now have, this is really a situation of when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. I remember when I was a kid, the Celtics player Reggie Lewis died. And he was born in 65, died in 93. So he was 28 years old. And there were no COVID vaccines at the time. That is a death where if it happened today, people like Candace Owens would be saying it's got to be related to that vaccine. And the truth is, this happens. And this happens, sadly, more frequently than people want to believe. I mentioned on the bonus show on Monday that my cousin, my second cousin, my mom's cousin, Fabian Bielinski, pretty well-known Argentinian film director, he died at age 47, was healthy, as far as we would normally say, a little bit overweight, from a heart attack when he was in Brazil. And you can look that up on Wikipedia. And it was tragic and devastating and sad. But these things do happen. And again, when all you have is a hammer, which is wanting to criticize vaccination, every death starts to look like a nail that you can hammer in. There were no COVID vaccines for a long time, and these things happen, sadly, all the time. There's almost 8 billion people on the planet. As more and more people get vaccinated, more and more of the people to whom everything happens will be vaccinated. Traffic accidents mostly will take the lives of vaccinated people, et cetera, et cetera. What Candace Owens is doing is extraordinarily dangerous. We have a voicemail number, and that number is 2192-DAVID-P. Here's a really fair question about COVID hospitalizations and something I said earlier this week. Let's take a listen to it. I welcome these types of confrontations with the things that I say because they're fair. Let's listen.
Hey, David, I had a question. You were just talking about how the hospitalization data, and you were saying that even though the hospitalizations look high, they're saying that not all of the hospitalizations are because of COVID, like a broken leg, and they just happen to also have COVID or something. And that makes sense. But I remember in the beginning of the pandemic, there were, you know, a bunch of right-wingers making the same argument. They're like, oh, the hospitalizations are overrated. You know, they're pretending like it's COVID when the person really died of this. And we were kind of discounting that as just kind of, you know, their same old shenanigans of just deflecting, you know, finding any excuse to, like, downplay the severity. So why is it now something that we're saying? Like, is there something specific about the data that is showing us how now that's really the case?
Yes, that's exactly it. This is a great question, which is for a long time, Republicans have been saying they haven't so much been saying the hospitalization numbers are exaggerated. Republicans have been saying the death numbers are being exaggerated. And at one point they were saying hospitals lie and say someone died from COVID to get more money. Now, we debunked that. What is true is that if someone is in the hospital for COVID, on average, it's more expensive to treat them than when someone does not have COVID. So it doesn't matter if they die or not. Medicare reimburses more money if someone actually is treated for COVID, because on average, that's more expensive to treat. The difference is before there was no data that pointed to a ton of the people in the hospital with COVID being in the hospital for something else. Before, you had a situation where almost anything that was elective or non-emergency was shut down. The hospitalization rate for the earlier strains was higher, and there was no data that suggested many of the people hospitalized right now with COVID are actually here for something else. We now have actual data, including, for example, from New York City. Omicron is so contagious, it is so widespread, and it is also asymptomatic in so many people, that in New York City, half of those in the hospital with COVID were not in the hospital because of COVID. They are not being treated with COVID. They incidentally are positive, but they're there for something else. So the reason why we now can say that and before we couldn't is that the data actually reflects that. It's a perfectly fair question, and that's the answer. And they're exactly the types of questions that we should be asking. We have a great bonus show for you today. We'll talk about Novak Djokovic facing prison for breaking isolation while COVID positive. This guy is just disgusting. We'll talk about Bernie Sanders' plan for everybody to get N95 masks, not crappy masks. And we will talk about InfoWars and Alex Jones' claims about being barely able to pay the bills after they brought in $165 million in 3 years. Get access to today's bonus show by signing up at joinpacman.com. You can use the coupon code WOW22 to get a discount.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-song word.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
WRCT, the inside from way out.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-song word.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beat. Pittsburgh, right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
nuclear holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated.
Is Democracy Now.
The war seems to be over, but the destitution has never been worse. So these boys, this father, has nothing now. There is no health care, there is no school, there is no income anymore. All income is gone. This is an economy in free fall.
As Afghanistan faces what could become the worst humanitarian crisis in the world, we'll look at how more Afghans may die from U.S. sanctions than at the hands of the Taliban. We'll speak with Jan Egeland of the Norwegian Refugee Council and Dr. Paul Spiegel of Johns Hopkins University. He recently returned from Afghanistan, where he worked with the World Health Organization.
People are suffering beyond belief. Hospitals, many hospitals are hardly functioning. There's not enough food to feed the patients. There's not enough medications. There's not enough heating. And there's a lack of clarity of where the money can go to ensure that people will be able to be treated.
Then, as the nation heads into the Martin Luther King Day holiday weekend, attempts by Democrats to pass major new voting rights legislation appear to have stalled. We'll look at a stunning new documentary titled Who We Are, A Chronicle of Racism in America.
I was 11 years old in 1968, and to my young eyes, we had been on a path toward racial justice that was amazing. There was the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act. We were winning on buses and at lunch counters. And then April 4th happened, and King got shot in the neck. And it felt like the whole thing just rolled back.
The film is based on a talk given by longtime ACLU lawyer Jeffrey Robinson. He'll join us along with the filmmakers Emily and Sarah Kunstler. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Democratic Senators Kirsten Sinema and Joe Manchin have rejected a plan by their party's leaders to change Senate rules to allow passage of two major voting rights bills. Speaking from the Senate floor Thursday, Senator Sinema said she would not vote to change the filibuster, even if she claimed to support the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act and the Freedom to Vote Act.
There's no need for me to restate my longstanding support for the 60-vote threshold to pass legislation. There's no need for me to restate its role protecting our country from wild reversals in federal policy.
Sinema was joined later on Thursday by West Virginia's Joe Manchin, who said he, too, would oppose a change in the filibuster. Their opposition all but dooms the prospect of the 117th Congress will pass voting rights legislation. President Biden reacted to the news.
I hope we can get this done. The honest to God answer is I don't know whether we can get this done.
Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said the Senate will delay a scheduled January recess to take up voting rights legislation Tuesday, one day after the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. The Supreme Court has struck down the Biden administration's requirement that workers at large private companies get vaccinated against COVID-19 or be tested weekly. The court's conservative majority ruled the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, overstepped its authority when it ordered the mandate affecting some 84 million private sector workers. In a dissenting opinion, Justices Breyer, Kagan and Sotomayor wrote, quote, "Today we are not wise. In the face of a still raging pandemic, this court tells the agency charged with protecting worker safety that it may not do so in all the workplaces needed," they wrote. In a separate 5-4 decision, justices upheld a vaccination requirement for Medicare and Medicaid providers covering about 10 million healthcare workers nationwide. As the winter COVID surge continues to worsen, President Biden said he would make another half billion